The opinions expressed on the Fanalyze podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the penultimate episode of the Fanalyze podcast. We're going to start off right away here today. We have a fan calling in with a hot take, so let's hear what he has to say.
So the Leafs, based on the last two games, or the last three games, have won 6-2 versus the Flames. Obviously, the other two games were close. They had a good lead, and then they almost lost versus Avalanche. They're a bit shaky at the end, defensive play. The next three games should be easy versus the Predators, Flyers, and the Sharks. We should be having a six-game win streak. But based on the Leafs, even if we come first, who knows about the playoffs, right? I mean, with our roster, Matthew Nyes, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Nylander, Mitch Marner, I don't think you can get a better team, so... If it was our year, I think it's this year, but those are the Leafs again.
So I can see Josh, the Leafs fan in the room. What do you think about his take?
You know, I couldn't agree more. Of course, as a Leafs fan, I'm going to be a little biased maybe, but I honestly do believe that out of all the teams that we've had in this era of Matthews, Marner, Nylander, you know, out of all these teams, this is the most playoff-ready our team has looked. Bringing guys like Scott Laughton and Brandon Carlo at the deadline were huge upgrades. And, you know, they're not going to provide much for you in the regular season, but that's not why we brought them in. Because we're clearly going to make the playoffs this year. And for the playoffs, you need size, you need physicality, and you need strong defense. It's true that defense does win you championships. And I think bringing guys like this who are ready to go into the corners for you, you know, we don't have many guys like that. Maybe you could say a Max Domi, but he's not massive. So, like, sure, he tries to go in the corners, but he gets crushed a lot of the times. And then you got guys like Marner and Matthews and Nylander who are your star talent, but, you know, they won't really get gritty with it. Like Matthews and Marner are great defensively, but like they're not those guys that will grind you through the playoffs. As we've seen, I won't deny that they're not the best playoff performers. But I think out of all the teams that we've had during this era, this is the most well-equipped playoff team.
Yeah. And to add on to Josh, I think the new addition with Craig Berube, that's definitely, we've seen a shift in the whole Leafs culture, I guess. Mm-hmm. I guess with Sheldon Keefe, I can imagine him going in the locker room after a loss, going like, you know what, guys, it's okay. We got next game. But Berube is more tough. Like, this guy's going to be on the Leafs after a tough loss. But a really big difference is Craig Berube and what he's given to the Leafs this season.
Yeah, and I think both of your points are spot on. Obviously, Josh, you're talking more about the roster and the talent that they have and their approach to the playoffs. And Miguel's point in the same way, obviously the culture around the Leafs is what a lot of people have seen as being their roadblock in going on a deep playoff run. They have all the talent, they have all the pieces, but there seems to be something lingering over their heads that they just can't get over the hump every year. So I agree with you that the Leafs are in a much better position for the playoffs this season. However, I have to play the devil's advocate here and be a little bit pessimistic about what happens if they don't go on that deep playoff run. Because the Leafs have tried and tried and tried over the last better part of a decade with the same core, and they've gotten the same results aside from making the second round a few years back after beating Tampa in the first round. And I know we were having this conversation earlier, Josh, but Austin Matthews is the highest AAV in the league. William Nylander is 11.5. Mitch Marner's going to need a new contract. I don't see that going below 12. John Tavares is going to need a new contract. He's not going to be getting a boatload of money because he's at $11 million average right now. He's not going to get that. But he could still be at around 6.5, maybe closer to 7, depending on what he's asking for, and maybe more so depending on what the rest of the market is willing to offer him. But they're also an old and aging team apart from their main core. You can look at guys like Tavares, who's 34 years old. Domi's 30 years old. Kampf is 30 years old. Yarncroc is 33. Scott Laughton's 30. Now, they do have guys like Matthew Nyes and Nicholas Robertson. Robertson has been an interesting case with the Leafs this year. Is he happy here? Are the Leafs happy with him here? We'll have to see what happens in the offseason. But Matthew Nyes is going to demand a big contract. He's been a great first-line player for this Leafs team, and he's meshed really well with the players that he's been paired up with. So Nyes is going to want more money. The Leafs are going to start to lose flexibility in building their depth, especially considering that if they do fail to make a deep playoff run, they'll be looking for a bigger free agent, a guy like Sam Bennett, who could also demand around $7 million. I believe we did the calculations earlier with all of those contracts taken into account with ballpark estimates of what new free agents or re-signing current players, they would end up having close to 70% of their entire salary cap tied up in about six players. That's not a recipe for success, especially not for a team that's had the same narrative play out year after year. Secondly, I'll also talk about their draft situation. Zero first-round picks the next 3 years. Prospects-wise, the Leafs run into some trouble. The Hockey Writers, ahead of this season, ranked the Maple Leafs with the 25th out of 32 prospect pools in the NHL. They list their top five prospects, and this was before the season. Fraser Minton, Ben Danford, Nikita Grebenkin, Dennis Hildeby, and Easton Cowan. As we know, Grebenkin and Minton are now gone. So where does that put their prospect pool now? It's got to be in the 30s. The Leafs do not have a prospect pool, and they don't have draft picks to replenish it. So the Leafs need absolutely, the Leafs are in a good position to go on a playoff run this year, but if they don't, they're going to be in a world of trouble. Now, the last thing before I let you refute and respond, you mentioned the players that they did pick up for this playoff run, Scott Laughton, Brandon Carlo, to highlight it. Laughton, at the time of recording, Laughton has 0 points in six games played. He's a minus three, and he's playing on the fourth line. For what he'll offer the team in the playoffs, he's the right kind of piece to bring into Toronto. But understanding that they gave up a first-round pick for a fourth liner, and Brandon Carlo only has one assist, that's his plus one, he has been solid on the first line with Morgan Riley. But both of these players cost first and second round picks. Now, I understand the need for bringing in these guys for the playoffs, but we've seen Patrick Marleau. We've seen Nick Foligno. We've seen Ryan Reeves. We've seen Tyler Bertuzzi. We've seen Joel Edmondson. We've seen Ilya Lyubushkin. We've seen Shen. We've seen Ryan O'Reilly, who didn't even want to come back here. And he explicitly said, I don't want to play in Toronto. We've seen the same story. It's not just the same core. It's the same player archetypes that they're trying to bring in to reinforce these playoff runs. And they're getting the same result. And on top of that, everyone on the internet's calling Scotiabank Arena the library now. The fans are becoming even more disconnected from the team. They have a great fan base of passionate fans, but they're being priced out of their own building. So it really seems like finally, after the better part of a decade, if the Leafs do not go on a deep playoff run right now, this year, next month, that you're going to start to see much larger and catastrophic changes because there is a serious disconnect within all aspects of the Toronto Maple Leafs organization.
So I just argue that the Leafs, yeah, they're getting older, but they're still in their prime for the next three, like, four seasons with the majority of their guys. So I don't see them falling out of a playoff spot for those seasons coming up. And a lot of these guys that, like, your depth guys, you can flip to other playoff teams for, you know, prospects or picks to build up that prospect pool. I agree with you when you say that Toronto's prospect pool isn't the greatest. I wouldn't say that they're dropping down to the 30s just because they lost, you know, Fraser Minton was a big part of their prospect pool. They still got guys like Topi Niemelä, who is a really good defenseman, and I can't wait for him to come into the league.
And also goaltending. Joseph Woll or Stolarz, who's going to be in the net for most of the playoffs. Looking at the past five games for Joseph Woll, with the exception in Las Vegas. I don't know what happened there, but he's playing very well, very high save percentage. And I think the Leafs have a good chance, a very good chance, of having a deep playoff run with great changes compared to last year. There's a big difference.
Yeah, I'll just say, look, it's yet to be seen. This is why we love the sport. This is why we watch the sport. But it definitely adds some pressure to the situation. All right, and now we'll turn to what is arguably the largest sporting event every March, which is, of course, March Madness. We're going to talk about who we have winning the tournament, who we have as a potential dark horse, and then if we have a particular upset in mind. With that being said, I will start with my winner. I have the Florida Gators winning March Madness this year. I have a couple reasons. I think they are battle-tested, and they're playing their best basketball at the right time. The SEC was arguably by far the toughest conference this year, which they obviously came out of. They finished 17-4 in the SEC if you count their conference tournament wins. Entering March Madness, they're winners of 12 of their last 13 games, which includes victories over the number one seed Auburn, which was on the road as well, and number two seed Alabama twice, and Tennessee as well. Really, they only had one standout bad game this season, or possibly two. There was Missouri and Tennessee, but then they did beat both of them in the SEC tournament, and Missouri has since been knocked out of the March Madness tournament in the first round. Walter Clayton Jr., was ranked by Bleacher Report as the third best player in the tournament, and Alex Condon is top 25 in a bunch of other rankings. So they're arguably one of the best guard and center duos in the tournament. They're also ninth overall in defense entering the tournament, so they're good on both ends of the floor. And Florida limits their opponents to the sixth worst effective field percentage in the country. And they also have an effective fast break despite their lack of forced turnovers generally. Lastly, I'll mention they do have a tough path. They would have to face potentially the back-to-back defending champions UConn in the next round, but they seem well equipped to be able to do so. And then I'll move on to my dark horse before we switch over to Josh. I have the Kentucky Wildcats. Now, I do know, I will preface, that they've only made the second round once in the last three tournaments, and last year they had an embarrassing first round loss to the legend of Jack Golke. But they have an easy path this year. They're set up with a matchup against Tennessee in the next couple of rounds, and the Wildcats have already beaten Tennessee twice this season. If the Wildcats can get past Illinois or Xavier in the next round, they will get to the Vols and have a real shot to make the Elite Eight. Kentucky is also matched up with Houston, who looks like arguably the most beatable one seed in the tournament. So it's not going to be easy, and they have a lot to prove, but they have a path that could get them there. They also have an elite offense. Without Jackson Robinson, they've still put up good numbers. They have an offense that's ranked eighth in college basketball, according to the KenPom rankings. And this offense features arguably one of the best statistical shooters in the nation, and Kobe Bria. So I actually, in our bracket here, I know it's a bit of a stretch. I have Kentucky going all the way to the finals before losing to the Gators. And the reason I have them going to finals, I know I've said they can beat Tennessee. I know I've said they can beat Houston. But my upset prediction is Duke at some point. I just think they have too big of a history of choking at some point in the tournament. And so for my bracket, just to build it out and have a crazy underdog run, I think a dark horse like Kentucky could beat Duke in the Final Four to then go on to play Florida.
All right, so I have Duke winning it all, which goes against Matthew's prediction right there. But yeah, so I think it's going to end up being like a finals battle of two number one teams between Duke and Florida. And I don't know, the main thing for me is just Duke's insane record, 31-3. So their last loss was February 8th against Clemson, which was pretty close. It was a 77-71 battle. But before that, you have to go all the way back to November 26th against Kansas, and it was a 2-point game. So that one really could have gone any direction. So yeah, I don't know. They've just been pretty ridiculous. Gone on a really great run here. They've been super consistent all year. Obviously, you know, if you're only losing three games, you're going to be a consistent team. And yeah, Duke is coming off of the 2025 ACC championship, winning that without their star player and potential first-round pick in this upcoming NBA draft, Cooper Flagg. So what that shows me is that, you know, maybe you don't have your star talent, but you can still show up, you can still win games. And the fact that they have him on top of that is just going to bolt, like, that can't hurt a team. Adding in a guy like Cooper Flagg is not going to hurt a team. But let's say he has a bad game here and there. They've proven that they can win, you know, without their number one player. Yeah, so for my upset here, I do have Michigan going on a little bit of a run here. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, they're the 5 seed. They're going up against the number 4 seed Texas A&M now. The thing for Michigan for me is that they have a sports culture there, whether it's football, basketball, hockey. I wouldn't be shocked if they can go on a little run here. Ultimately not winning at all. They could turn some heads here. So they're my upset, but also, yeah, my dark horse.
So my favorites to win the March Madness tournament are the Auburn Tigers. And the Tigers are coming into the tournament, number 1 seed in their division. And they started the tournament with a big 20-point win over Alabama State. And a key factor for their offense and defense is 6'10", Jonai Broom, who averaged 18.7 points, 10.6 rebounds, and 3.1 assists, and 2.2 blocks per game this season. And Broom is on track to become the first SEC player since 1991 to average at least 15 points, 10 rebounds, and 2 blocks per game. And they're number 1 seed for a reason. They've been consistent all season, both offensively and defensively. They're top 10 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. Plus, they've proven that they can beat top teams, beating Tennessee, Kentucky, and handled Alabama twice. I'll talk about my dark horse team. I have Gonzaga, the Bulldogs. I think people are sleeping on this team because they aren't a top seed like in past years. Their star player, Ryan Nembhard, younger brother of Andrew Nembhard, has been a huge addition coming in with good experience. He also played for Canada in some FIBA tournaments, so I think it's safe to say he can perform under pressure and can lead this team. Mark Few, coach of the Bulldogs, is one of the best coaches in the country, having gone to multiple Final Fours and knowing how to prep his team for tournament play. And this season, Gonzaga is ranked for second in points per game, first in assists per game, and second in field goal percentage. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them in the Elite Eight or even the Final Four.
I think Duke will take the win this year. They've already been the top overall seed, and with Cooper Flagg back in the lineup for Duke's first-round matchup, they're definitely off to a strong start. For my dark horse, I think Colorado State is a team that could easily become a bracket buster this year. They went into the Mountain West tournament on fire and came out even hotter. Led by Neek Clifford, a star who has been carrying the team through multiple rounds, the Rams have the potential to pull off some big upsets this season.
And with that, we will now turn to what is becoming a fan favorite segment. It is our third of four fanalized quizzes this week. Mr. Joshua Safe is on the hot seat. He is, of course, claiming to be a fan of the Maple Leafs. Would you care to share a statement?
I've been a fan of the Maple Leafs for a really long time, for most of my life at this point. I started off as just a hockey fan in general, but you know, I truly developed a passion for the Leafs, and my dad was a Leafs fan, you know, my mom's a Leafs fan, like, so I grew up in a Leafs household. Oh,
I'm sure we're all familiar with the rules at this point, so we'll just get straight to it. So, Josh, with the first question worth 100 points, how many other teams have lost to a 42-year-old Zamboni driver?
Are you freaking kidding me? See, okay, my instinct is to go to zero and say that he's just trolling me because
yeah,
I'm a
Leafs
fan.
That's not really your first question. I just had to throw that one.
Give me that one.
That
would have
been too
one.
Easy. The answer is zero because only the Leafs could do something like that.
I think you should give me 5 points for that.
I'll give you question one instead. Okay. Name the last four team captains.
So Matthews, Tavares, Phaneuf. It's not Matt Sundin, is it? That's too far back. You know what? I'm just Sundin.
That's correct.
Is it?
Matt Sundin. Oh, they had an error there without a captain. So you have 100 points off of your first question. The
Let's
correct
go.
Answer for that last person was Matt Sundin. Now, with question two for 200 points. From 2013 to 2016, the Toronto Maple Leafs had the same goaltending tandem before trading them both away ahead of the Matthews-Marner era. Who were those two goaltenders?
James Reimer and Jonathan Bernier.
That's too easy. That's quick. That's correct, of course. So you're now up to 300 points. Now, with question three, Matt Sundin played with the Toronto Maple Leafs from 1994 to 2008, scoring 420 regular season goals. Whose Maple Leaf record of 389 goals did Sundin eclipse during the 2007-2008 season?
Is it Daryl Sittler?
That's correct. It is Daryl Sittler. He's 3 for 3 so far. That's 600 points on the board. Now we'll move to question four. They get a little bit harder here. From 2014 to 2016, the Leafs drafted Nylander 8th overall, Marner 4th overall, and then Matthews 1st overall. Out of the rest of those three draft classes, only one player remains on the active roster. Who is that player?
Oh, that's tough. Because Riley was 2012, wasn't he? I think. None of the goalies. What are the defensemen? None of the defensemen, right? I know this is wrong, but I'm just gonna go Morgan Riley. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Unfortunately, that's incorrect. He was drafted a few years before that era. The correct answer was Joseph Woll.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about Joseph Woll. Oh, sorry, my brick wall.
Ahead of this season, Liljegren was also still on the roster, but of course he's on the Sharks now. It is now Joseph Woll is the only other remaining player. Now we'll move on to question five. You got to be a fan to answer this one. Who was Phil Kessel's roommate during a majority of his time in Toronto? And where and when did that player win a Stanley Cup?
Are you kidding me? Wait, I swear I know this, but I'm not 100% sure. I swear I know this. I want to say it's Bozak, and he won it with the Blues in 2019. Tyler Bozak, 2019 Blues.
That's correct. Bozak winning the Stanley Cup with the St. Louis Blues in 2019. That is a 500-pointer. So to tally up, you have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1,100 points. For reference, Miguel is at 200. But Christina finished last week with 1,200. So you're going to need a little bit of a wager here on your sixth and final question.
Bet it all.
To surpass.
I don't want to bet at all, although I'm definitely going for the win here, because you know you go big or go home. So I will. Yeah, let's wager 300 here.
300 points on the line. That is locked in. Now we will go to your wager question, the sixth and final question. After an 11-year stretch that saw the Maple Leafs only make the playoffs one time, on April of 2017. The Toronto Maple Leafs made their return to face the Washington Capitals. While the Capitals won the series in six games, the Leafs won game two in double overtime. Who scored the winner and which two players got credited with assists?
I have to name the two players that got credited with an assist. Oh my gosh. Wait. Shoot. It's either Kasperi Kapanen scored the goal or Brian Boyle scored the goal. I think Kasperi Kapanen scored the goal. Brian Boyle got the first assist. Who got the secondary assist? We're going Tyler Bozak here. I don't know, man. Let's just lock that in. Tyler Bozak.
So unfortunately, the answer I have was not Tyler Bozak. The answer was Matt Martin.
Oh, the freaking duster, bro. That duster, Matt Martin. What are you doing on the ice, bro?
He's getting a secondary assist out there.
Ugh.
Now, with that being said, you would lose 300 points, which would take you down to 800. But what I will do, the more I think about this, for the sake of professionalism and preparation, if we can find online that Matt Martin wasn't officially credited with the secondary assist, I will award you the 300 points.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we'll search it up. It was a pleasure. Pleasure doing the quiz with you. This was fun. Very nerve-wracking, but it was fun.
Yes, he is officially credited
with
the second overtime assist. Matt Martin did pass it to Brian Boyle, who found Kasperi Kapanen in double overtime.
Oh my gosh.
And so with that being said, we head towards our final episode of the season next week. NHL and NBA playoff predictions, as we won't be able to be in touch with you until next fall semester, which means we will be missing the playoffs. So we'll give you our thoughts of who we think will make it, who we think won't, and what might end up playing out in both of those playoffs. And of course, we'll tie up any loose ends from any of the other topics we've discussed this season. We thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next week for our final episode.